around the microphone we go.
All right.
Yes. I made that one better, didn't I?
Amateurs.
Yeah, couldn't even finish it.
And cheers, number two. Yay. Here you go, ladies.
Oh, God.
All right. And welcome to RPG Afterglow, where the shots make people gag, the dice gets rolled, the story gets told, and we ponder the significance.
Yep.
I'm Jake.
And I'm Mako.
And I'm Nicole.
And I'm Megan.
And we are here, minus our beloved Schlegel.
Oh.
But it's something of a unique setup where both Mako and I were absent for last session, so we have no idea what happened, and the sole content rests in the Baker Girls. So,
aren't
yeah.
you worried?
A little bit.
I have a disorder called Swiss cheese brain, so...
All right.
She forgets everything. Yeah. I'm like, hey, remember when we were little and we did this thing? She's like, no. Absolutely not. I have no clue.
Near and dear to my heart.
Because you just go absent on those things, like chasing bubbles in your brain.
Last week I started to take notes. I put on a post-it and I was going to like take little notes so I could at least jog my memory.
Right.
And then I realized, oh, Schlegel's taking notes on his computer. We're good. I don't need to worry about
except,
it.
Except he didn't come.
It wasn't there for the one before, so I don't quite even know where they left off. You were with them.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know how you have vanished out of the scene. Or...
Well, mine was a little more, a little less involved, where, in a nutshell, last week we had talked at great length about us all being in our respective locations, Tobias and I being down looking for Magnus actually not being where we were looking, but in a bar fight, and Taro being off in the wilderness doing Taro business, but then at the end we all ended up meeting in this cave and fighting a good fight together, joining up, and we get back to our townhome, and simple enough for me, we get there and it was, okay, it's late, we're done for the night. And there was a note on my door from Kriya.
No, Chris Kringle.
From Christ. Yeah, there was a note on my door from Christ, my, our
is it with a T?
Gnome friend. Yeah, Christ Kringle.
Oh.
It was explained to me.
Because Wolfie was making it more...
Because it's not quite
so
Christ Kringle.
Santa.
Right. And it's not like they were singing Christmas songs down in the Shadow Plane.
It's not crisp.
Yeah. Crisp,
I
think.
Like apples.
Yeah.
Or potatoes.
Quite the stretch.
Anyway, our elder gnome friend left me a note on the front door of our apartment.
Got it.
And just said, Boddington, come quick. So my assumption was I came quick.
So Boddington just
you were gone.
And then I was gone, yeah.
He's like, okay, we'll see you guys later.
Yeah.
I don't know if we heard that, so we sat down on Sunday and, you know, did the whole little... And this is where we left off.
Right, because it's been a really good practice.
On.
Right. The DM poses to the players what happened last week.
Yeah.
So it's not just us drooling while the DM talks at us. We're actually involved in that practice of collectively recalling what happened.
Right.
So I don't know how... I mean, first of all, we always play here, where Mako and I, in the basement that we are currently talking in.
Yes.
Yes.
But considering this is St. Paul, and there's this kind of rivalry between St. Paul and Minneapolis, and all the other players live in Minneapolis, that it was located, at least for this session, in Minneapolis, so...
Yeah, it was very weird. Wolfie was on time.
Because he was, a block and a half away?
Because he had a block to get there.
Yeah.
He was like, oh my gosh, I can leave at 5:50 and I'm still on time.
And yeah, don't get used to it.
At one point, I think we made reference to the fact that there's six of us. And two live here, and Nikki and I are living together, and Steve and Wolfie live a block apart.
Yeah. So it's a trifecta of pairs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
but we have the superior
and
basement.
Wolfie, I don't remember if it was Wolfie.
And you have the table.
We have the table. That's what I was going to say. It was like, we have the table.
And if you need a reference, just check out our Facebook, where there's
RPG Afterglow on Facebook, and like us.
Right, like it, and you can see the blueprint of our house. And in it, there's a representation on the third floor of a gaming table, and that's the precise dimensions of our actual gaming table.
Really?
Yeah.
On
the third floor?
Yeah,
on the third floor.
Because the second floor is the bedrooms, and the third floor has the library for Violet and my alchemy lab. But right when you get there, when you arrive to that floor, there's the gaming area. Because every good adventuring party needs a gaming area for a little meta. Because who knows, maybe they roleplay too.
You never know.
Yeah. Humans in suburbia working mundane day jobs. Maybe it's fun for them. A good relief.
Can you see Tobias playing a role-playing game?
Yeah.
No. Or Taro.
Taro being like,
stupid. This is stupid. I don't get why we're doing this.
What? I'm a dice?
Yeah.
What am I?
What?
This is dumb. Let's just go kill some
people. I'll play his character. Don't worry. Yeah.
So what happened after he split the scene?
There was a lot of taking care of town stuff for it. So I think what we started with, we noticed that the townhouse
and this is something I didn't really know about, but the townhouse was burned and windows are missing.
That was a combat that occurred prior to your involvement.
Yes. Yeah.
Our house was invaded by were-rats, and we didn't hesitate. We hesitated a little bit to resort to pyrotechnics, but yeah. In order to win the fight, you know, you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. So we haven't quite cleaned it up.
I did not resort to pyrotechnics.
Yeah, way to go. No.
I just killed them.
You resorted to breaking windows.
Well,
or throwing
were-rats out of windows.
Yeah, and you splattered blood all over the place.
Yeah, it was glitter blood.
So you came to a pretty trashed house, and you guys, did you clean it up?
Well,
did you take care of it?
they cleaned it up. Tara, of course, was like, this isn't my house. Yeah. I'm not cleaning it up.
Right.
And then they spent a significant amount of time trying to find a contractor and figure out how
a carpenter named Jesus.
Keep going.
I believe was Wolfie's name for it.
Hey, you were complaining about his obscure names. Now you got one you can remember.
Actually, I think that was Steve.
Yeah, I think Steve actually named him.
Steve. Jesus, yeah.
Because, they're just talking about a random
Wolfie's always
carpenter.
You know, it's okay that Wolfie did it a few times, but it's like, Wolfie, you're being a bit lazy with that. It's like, okay, you guys come up with the names. Come on, Wolfie. You can sit down.
That's kind of fine.
Yeah, nothing's wrong with a little DM input. When he comes up with the name, you complain. And now that he's leaving it to us.
Why do you think we would end up with a cleric named Tropicana? I mean, that would never happen if Wolfie was doing it.
Otherwise, it would be Farthusiousness.
Yeah. Some long German word.
Right.
A really good thing for a DM to get is a baby book.
Or a name generator.
A baby name book. I have one and I've had it for years and it's like the best thing ever. Because you'll get the names, but every name has like a meaning.
Now, before we get into actually what happened, I'm curious, like, was it just set up at his kitchen table? Because I know he took random miniatures and because we have our stack of miniature drawers, but he took the necessary provisions, but I don't know, did it work as far as the setup?
Amount of provisions.
Did he take provisions? I thought he completely left her and completely forgot.
No, Steve took a bunch of miniatures, but they were like, you know, there was, here's some bugbears, here's
a dire crocodile.
A dire crocodile.
A unicorn.
A dire boar. A unicorn. And like,
yeah.
We're not going to fight a whole lot of unicorns, I guess.
He just always wants to take that unicorn.
He loves that unicorn.
I love the unicorn.
And so then Wolfie ended up using pop tabs
for the goblins.
Goblins. Pop tabs.
Yeah, that was the one thing I was kind of like imagining you playing that I was regretful of. Like,
I was trying to flip the goblins over when they died, so I flipped the pop tabs. I'm like, nope.
That's not
it looks
boring.
The same.
Yeah.
So I just took them off and put an X.
For those of you who don't live in Minnesota, pop tabs.
Or soda tabs.
Soda tabs.
Soda.
Or Coke tabs.
Or soft drink.
Y'all sharee, bitcha.
The first time I was in Australia, I was like 14. And I was like, went up to somewhere and I'm like, I would like pop. It started to me like it was batshit nuts.
Yeah. I went to Kansas once and I did a double take when I bought something at a record store and she asked if I wanted a sack.
A bag.
In the South, they call
a bag.
Carts. Buggies. And I just got the biggest kick out of that. And that was like the one thing I picked up when I was in Georgia. I'm like, let's go get a buggy.
Meep, meep.
Because it's fun.
Maybe that's what Boddington will start calling his little wagon.
The buggy.
Get on the alchemical buggy.
The buggy.
Us talking about what happened last week.
Yeah, because we can't lead you.
We have no idea.
But all we know is you guys found some carpenter. Looking for a carpenter?
Okay. What's that stat about a female takes 30 words to say something that a man can take 5?
Stop. So, the way it worked is we got back to the house, and it was still all destroyed and burned, so we found a carpenter. But we also found a wizard to come cast some spells on the doors and windows.
Right.
To make
not,
a lock.
Not Orion?
Not Orion. I think we didn't need
it was just a random wizard.
Of that caliber.
Of that caliber. So we... I believe the spell that they ended up using was, at least on the doors, was Arcane Lock.
Yeah.
No.
Which is not one that it's not a high-level spell. It's only a second level.
But between a fighter, a cleric, and a ranger.
Yeah,
what
really.
What do you got?
But,
how does it work?
It is basically works so that you cast the Arcane Lock spell. And I will say that Wolfie did modify it for our purposes, because basically the spell makes it locked and it has a higher DC to to unlock
An already existing door lock.
But he said, well, if you have a key and you're going to unlock the door, because there's something in the spell where if you
use knock or something like that to open it, you can still open it.
Okay.
But it only takes the spell off for 10 minutes. So it's not as if Nock will dispel it.
Dispel it, right.
But that arcane lock will come back after 10 minutes. So he kind of said it's something to that effect, where if we come up with our key, we're supposed to be going in.
We're still able to get in.
Now, did you, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun story-wise, but did you make accommodations for Taro?
No.
Did Taro not want accommodations?
Taro's just like, I can sleep outside.
You're a ranger.
Yeah. I got this bed roll here. I'm good. Magnus was very insistent on trying to come up with some sort of accommodations.
I was going to pull a couch onto one of the balconies.
But I think we kept
talking about sleeping outside.
I think you did that. Like
we have no shortage of balconies.
We've
got five balconies at our house.
Yeah, a lot.
What he ended up doing was putting a couch on a balcony because he's just like, it's really comfortable.
We could even make like a hammock.
I think we talked about a hammock and putting trees.
No, I think we ended up with a hammock. You're right.
Sweet. That's what Bonnie would have suggested.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So basically, we took money off of the top.
And Violet would just be annoyed, like, what the hell's going
on? Come on, he's our short brethren.
Yeah. Well, because Tara's just like, I don't care. And Magnus is like coming up with all these ideas.
I've already baked you cookies in your hesitancy.
Well, it was a really tough week for Magnus because he was stuck with Tobias and Taro, and he...
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
At several points, well, you know, there's one point where Tobias sits down and he starts explaining what Kriya is this long, and he's like, and I drone on and on and on for 2 hours.
And Taro's like interested. He's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the two of them are having this conversation. Magnus goes in the kitchen. A starts baking dinner and then just starts banging his head on the counter. I miss the gnome. I'm so bored.
He goes upstairs to the game room and just plays like some game where he's playing all four parts. Just, oh, good move. Step, step, step. Oh, what'll I do about that one? This move. Oh, good move. Wise. Step, step, step. Yeah.
But then we basically, at the end of the previous week, we had gotten 2 giant chests of, we didn't know.
Treasure of some sort.
Mysterious treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a coin purse of something. And
yeah, it had 20 platinum in with crazy weird spiders on there.
Crazy weird spiders.
Yep.
Remember stuff.
Taro actually unlocked those, and then we took some money off of the top of what was there to do the house. So
which Taro did not know about, and is kind of pissed off.
You
got your ears, though.
Taro didn't know about it because when I asked Nicole 3 times if Taro was okay with that, she was like, yeah.
I was occupied with my owl.
She's doing something else, and so she was just like, yeah, that's fine. And then later I was like, you know we did that. And she's like, Taro would have been pissed. And I was like, well, Taro doesn't know now.
I gave you metagaming warning.
Yeah.
But you can pick locks?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All
right. I mean, not to any super great extent, but I, you know, have some ranks in disabled device.
Oh, okay.
That might be a point of competition later on. Boddington hasn't seen you pick locks, but Boddington can pick locks pretty well, too.
He might be better. Who knows?
He's very confident. I'm not about to do any sort of stat comparison because I think that's kind
too
of cheating.
Too metagaming?
That's cheating us out of good story. But Boddington's never failed.
Mm.
Not to say that he's, you know, especially stacked but he at least has gotten lucky.
Yeah.
But then we got it open. We took some money. I think it ended up, it wasn't, I mean.
Like 1,600 gold.
It was like 2,400.
Wow.
But, I mean, there's a lot of fucking windows in that place. And so we're just going to do the first and second floor. But then I was like, yeah, this could bite us.
I do remember actually as I was drawing out our house, like being like, I'm putting a lot of windows in here. Meh. What's the worst that could happen?
There's windows that are like 20 feet long.
We just have to replace them all.
Yeah.
But
I thought they would be nice because if a gnome's designing this, he'd want, or she'd want, a lot of natural light coming in, a lot of just stimulus.
Sparkles.
Right.
Makes sense.
So it was,
you can catch your eye on what's going on outside and be able to open it up and yell out at somebody. You know?
However, I mean, luckily it's only a second level spell, so it wasn't that expensive to do it. And I think it ended up costing us like $2,460.
Okay.
But it's worth it if we don't have to deal with
were rats
breaking into the house.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And did that account for fixing up what we had burned? Like the table
and
everything else?
Yeah, like
that
was like the carpenter. We hired a carpenter and
that was
did
Jesus.
All this. Jesus, the carpenter. And then we putzed.
Well, there was all the stuff that was in the treasure chest.
Was there any magic? Was there magic?
There was some magic in there. We ended up finding a bunch of coins, assorted different coppers to golds and platinums and things. And
there's like 10,000 copper.
We ended up finding 10 crossbow bolts that were magical.
Crossbow bolts that were magical?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, how super convenient for my ranger.
Yeah. I'd be a little jealous except for the fact that every time I've used my crossbow, I've been like, eh. All right. Bombs!
Well, And then we found a horn, like bugle of some sort.
Okay.
That was also magical.
And a ring.
A ring.
How did you find out that these things were magical?
Detect magic.
Oh, I suppose you can do that, can't you?
Yeah. And then
when our little magic obsessed gnome isn't there.
Well, yeah. And one of the things that it brought up an interesting conversation for me was that I'm playing this character who, anytime he gets money, he's like, I think I'll buy Violet a present.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I think I'll.
How can I use this money to make someone happy?
Yeah. Like, he's just, you know, happy go lucky. And I have too much gold right now. You know, like, because I just
My thoughts exactly.
And so that's why we just give money away.
Yeah.
Which is good, because we needed this gold. But at the same time, my character's not greedy, so I'm trying to play that portion of it.
Oh, but then there's the conversation about how to divide the gold.
Right. Oh. No, that's not what I was going to say, but...
But we will talk about that.
The first thing I was going to say is that, like...
If Tara has any say.
That came up was with all these magic items and what's happening with them, and are we trading them or are we doing this or selling them, was how do I balance a character that doesn't want anything with a player who's going, all right, guys,
don't screw me over.
Yeah. Like all the magic stuff and all the... Because we're taking these things and we're trading them out. Like, wasn't there something big that we had and like you traded for a wand?
And we've always kept kind of a loose sense of like, we have this much booty. Everyone's kind of getting this much out of it, whether it's directly from that bounty or it comes along in the adventuring. You know, because there is kind of a slippery slope then when you start accounting for the gold value of every single thing you get and making sure everybody gets approximately that amount. And it just becomes like, I balanced my checkbook earlier this afternoon. I don't need to do this today.
You balance your checkbook?
Yeah, who does that?
But, Jake. So, I mean, yeah, because I was thinking... I don't think I've ever... any kind of magical weapon or anything of that nature.
You had the color spray wand and the...
We've all gotten good stuff.
Well, the wands I'm usually always buying with my own money.
Right.
Because they're really... They're, like, low...
But you've also received that bracelet gift.
Yeah.
Well, and it's just...
That came back to Magnus at all?
It's not necessarily that Magnus has gotten screwed
right.
at any point, no. But that Megan, as a player, is trying to balance out the fact that she doesn't want to end up that way.
Yeah.
While Magnus would constantly give things away.
I mean, what is the ring? What's the ring with that?
Well, get there.
I'm much more of an asshole than my character.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I want stuff, guys.
Yeah.
Give me things.
And Magnus is like, here.
Well, the conversation that we had about dividing the treasure was a fight between Magnus and Taro.
And Violet, I think you would be happy with this fight.
Ooh. Yeah. Taro was adamantly against giving Violet any money.
Because she had no idea who Violet was.
Oh. Didn't know who Violet... Yeah. Didn't know who Violet was, had no... Like, that little gnome did not fight in this fight. There's no reason they should get treasure.
And so
I'm not going to split my treasure with him.
Magnus said, everyone always gets... an equal amount of treasure, and we're always going to do it that way. And if Taro, if you want to keep getting money, then that's the way you have to do it. And this is a conversation between Magnus and Taro. Tobias, being Tobias, walks in.
First, Taro goes, he's the boss. You said he was the boss. Should we split this up with that other gnome that's not here?
Uh-oh.
And Tobias goes, no, that makes sense. Violet shouldn't get any. Violet's not here.
I think he did. Violet doesn't get any money because Violet wasn't here. But then the money that you three got in the catacombs before...
Because, being along the same...
It's just for you three.
Oh.
Yeah. So...
Okay. Well, yeah, that seems like a massive bookkeeping clusterfuck.
Right? Like, and I was just like, everybody just gets an equal amount. We have money, we divide it by five, that's how it works.
But my character wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like,
and seeing how, like, this conversation was obviously inevitable, we get done with a quote-unquote delve and we've got all this booty... Boddington sees a note and runs off. It's like, now seeing how you guys had this conversation, I was kind of like, well, I should have been part of that conversation. But then, wait a minute, I'm kind of like Magnus in that Boddington gets a note and wants to run off and see what that's about. He doesn't care about how the stuff gets divided up.
Magnus has your money, by the way.
Nice.
But I mean, Taro had no issue with Boddington.
Because I was there, hoping to pour my weight.
Yeah. Right. But I have no idea.
But I wasn't able to be there to defend you, because I would have. Because
I was like, it's got to get her share.
But majority is the two sticklers, along with the happy-go-lucky half-orc, quark, sorry.
Yeah, no wonder I missed the gnomes.
Yeah, I get it.
Did this get resolved, or was it...
Yeah,
it was Tobias. It's Tobias.
Oh, I suppose.
Tobias is the boss.
Yep.
And he just kind of like rolled his eyes and walked away, like, I hate you.
That was another I missed the gnomes moment.
Yeah,
that was an I missed the gnomes moment.
Okay, so going on from there, what they decided to do is do some errands in town, which...
Okay.
Because
this was over the last few weeks, a sparse or a stretched out town session where typically we've leveled up and
gone to town.
And then, yeah, it's like 20 minutes and we go on to the next thing, or an hour and we go on to the next thing. But this has been like, we've been level 5 in town, distracted by our house getting attacked, by having to go rescue Magnus, by meeting up with other people, by running off with a note for the past, what, 3 weeks? So we're still roughly, like, leveling up, quote-unquote, as I do the air quotes on the radio.
We went to see Lindora.
Okay. Lindora.
We brought Lindora, you know, these magic items to see if she could further identify what they were, because Tobias failed his spellcraft checks.
Oh, you know.
And Taro's, his only interest is finding more of these spell or potions that Magnus gave his owl, because his owl George is apparently not very strong,
aka heal potions.
Right.
Yeah, so heal potions.
So we brought Lindora these, but then in addition to that, we also brought the
dagger.
Cold life stealing dagger of evilness,
which Taro decided he wanted.
Isn't that what we do when we kill things? We steal their life. This is more efficient.
It helps me. It makes me better.
Yeah.
Right.
I learned that lesson with poison.
Well, and Magnus flat out refused.
He's like, we're not keeping this.
And what did Tobias have to say? I mean, I'm sure he couldn't stand behind.
Well, Steve, you know.
It's Steve being Steve.
This is a mechanical advantage.
Medium-sized dagger for a small creature, so.
It's obviously.
It's a dagger.
We had to go into the mechanics of how a small creature would wield a medium-sized weapon.
Not to mention the whole question of morals.
Well, and I thought for sure that'd be something Tobias would be like, no, we cannot.
We have to flush this thing out of the toilet.
And I think what it was actually.
Yeah.
Is Steve was.
Well, Steve, we jumped back. Steve was having that conversation. But then I think it got to the point where Tobias was like, no, we can't keep this.
I don't think Tobias would even tolerate you having it or anyone having it.
Well, I don't think he would sell it.
We can't touch it.
I was really surprised he would sell it.
We can't touch it.
But Taro can, because Taro's neutral.
But would Tobias have that sort of philosophy of ends justify the means?
No, Violet could.
No, she's neutral good.
You're not good.
I think we were mistaken there when we said that. I think we said that Violet could wield it.
But still, the question remains. I mean, I'm not trying to, like, dictate how Tobias would make his decisions, but Tobias works for a cleric of good. Why would he tolerate this evil weapon being used for whatever ends?
Well, and this is one thing that I was going to jump into at some point. This week, while working hard at my job, I was listening to the podcast, and you guys were talking about the manacles.
Poisons. Oh, the manacles.
And Magnus actually...
Wait, I think we have an email on this. From, what do you know?
Megan.
But I don't know if this is relevant right now to what you're saying.
Yes.
This email here says, like, Magnus is stupid enough to think that if he destroyed the manacles, Boddington would have come back. This is back when we were in the Shadow Plane and I got sucked into the wall by that Dark Knight, Black Knight.
Dark Knight.
There's a reason for it. There is always a reason for it. End quote.
Yeah, I am a fan of sending you random emails while I'm
when you're not there to say what you want to say.
Yeah. Assholes are talking about me. But basically, the point of bringing it back to the manacles or farther, I played a character in our last big campaign that was true neutral, and it was really entertaining because she was a cleric to Dionysus.
So Dionysus is
being neutral.
But what would give us a little insight on Dionysus?
Dionysus being the god of wine and drunkenness and celebration and civilization, I think, as well. She was a great healer, but she also had a tendency to use some evil spells.
She did.
She did. She used a lot of necromancy spells, and, you know, her thought was kind of, as being true neutral, well, if it works, why not? If it accomplishes what I'm trying to do, why wouldn't I use it?
Yeah, I don't think that Tobias is that kind of a character.
No, that's not where I was going with it. But the fact of, at one point, Steve, who was the DM in that campaign, said, are you sure Lola's not becoming a little evil? And I said, well, I was pretty adamant that she wasn't, because she healed most of the time. Most of what she did was healing her party and helping people and being fun. But then every once in a while, if she had to kill someone, she'd, you know, bust out some crazy necromancy spell. And playing that was really interesting to me to think about alignments. And I know that's something that a lot of people say, well, you know, and how I was introduced to it was, your alignment is just however you play your character. You know,
it's an initial worldview.
Well, an alignment, boy, man, there's a conversation that has gone through many, you know, people. But
some people see it as constricting or as training wheels. Like, why do you need to have something dictate what your character thinks? Right. But it's, especially with the mechanics of certain things having alignments.
You know, if you don't have an alignment, if you don't have a rules or a logic or this foundation of what you have to do, then you can just make up whatever you want to fit your situation. I don't think that's really fair.
But a fun exercise that Mako and I have often gone through when we go out and see a movie is that when there's an especially gripping character, it's kind of a fun exercise to do that backwards, to say, what is the alignment of that character?
Yeah.
Like, that villain was definitely lawful evil, or that
lawful
protagonist.
Lawful evil makes great villains.
Yeah. But, I mean, because of just those three shades of two aspects, you can combine them in, what, 9 different ways? Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You can usually, when the more compelling characters, you can kind of put a label on them and see how that's kind of, even though they're acting without this role-playing system's guidelines, they are still kind of following that relative code.
Right.
So it's not meant to limit you, but to inspire you.
Well, and the point of it is not to say that, you know, you should have to do what your alignment is. Because I think what
I think the biggest undoing for an alignment, or for alignment to factor into something, is to say, you're this alignment. That's not what your character would do.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's misusing alignments.
And there are times where, like, that's not what your character would do.
Yeah.
Such as if you're a cleric, you can only be one step away from your god.
It's worth at least bringing up to make the player consider, no, but I am going to do this because...
Yeah. Well, and so one of the things that I've taken with Magnus, I think rather subtly, because usually I'm pretty like, guys, guess what I'm doing?
Yeah. Me too.
we're
so bad at keeping secrets.
But I don't know if it's something that we've discussed up until this point, but the part of Magnus's alignment that I'm playing up is good. Magnus is very angry and wary and afraid of things that are not good, that are evil. You know, so he has this, several examples of it being, he wouldn't go into that room. The reason he was holding the door open wasn't because he was like, oh, this is a big door and it might shut on us. It's because, holy shit, I don't want to be in this room. This room is evil. I can feel it. I can tell it. I don't want to go in. I don't want to be there. I'm going to stand by this door so it doesn't close and lock me into this room.
Is it more than just fear, though?
I think it's kind of a combination of fear and hatred.
Okay.
But then the point of the manacles being, these are evil. All I can think about is someone being stuck on this table. I'm going to sit here for 3 hours or however long, you know, it ended up taking Magnus to destroy the manacles because they were some insane check.
Yeah.
To just sit
so
there.
So that no one else can use these to do bad things.
Yeah.
So the point was, Magnus doesn't like the dagger because it's evil.
And I think even Boddington has had a certain growth, a certain pull towards good, just because he's seen Tobias save his ass a number of times.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just there's been situations where Boddington was saved by Tobias's goodness.
Yeah.
That when we're faced with something like a dagger of badness from Boddington's, you know, relatively simplistic frame of mind when it comes to alignments, he's like, no, we can't tolerate that stuff. What do you know about it, Boddington? I don't know. It's just bad. You
it's
know,
just that's, bad.
But it's because of his experiences it's informing that. If you were to do that, like, first level, he would have been like, oh, well, it's shiny, kind of like with my debate with poison. Okay. I'm like, it's a means to an end. I can...
Let's just use it.
Yeah, why not?
Well, and the other point of that was when we were in the Shadow Plane, and you were like, why was Magnus freaking out? Violet wanted to look at stuff. That was why. Not because the Shadow Plane in and of itself is evil, because it's not. I think it's, like, mildly neutral.
It's host to
right, you know,
probably like, more evil than good, but still, it's not.
Well, no, it's like a
I don't know.
Transition plane.
It's not like...
It is actually truly, it's like neutral.
Well, the material plane is neutral, too.
Mm-hmm.
Existing on these neutral planes, it's not any different than our own.
Right.
But that there was a room, and there was bad things in there, and there was robes to Tyrannus, and there was, you know, these things that were very clearly evil to Magnus. And he was like, I just want to leave. Right now, we have to leave. We have to get out. We have to go. And Violet just being like, no. I'm going to take this lock.
But that's the neutral compulsion. Blow up this bomb,
so Magnus goes down to 2 hit points.
You're fine.
Anyway, so we sold stuff.
But we'd come up with this concept, because we were talking about George, my owl, for a while. And so we came up...
And his well-being, or future well-being, or...
To an extent, yeah. We were talking about if there's some way to create something where he could be stronger.
This conversation was initiated by Schlegel?
No, actually, I think I was talking with Wolfgang about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think Schlegel had a lot to say about it.
Yes.
At least it's not a fox.
So Wolfgang and I kind of came up with this concept of maybe going something along the lines of a large person or animal growth. So we came up with this concept of maybe creating a saddle of some sort. Because once we would enlarge George, he could be ridden.
By the small folk.
By the small folk. So it was kind of this concept because George only has very... Because I roared. Roared.
Roar.
I rolled very poorly on his hit dice.
Oh,
So he has very low hit points.
But you have the benefit of other things. I don't know what your dexterity is, but you have superior movement. You can fly 80 feet. So you can kind of just be there in the sky, swooping in.
Yeah, and not then, really being. But I mean, the concept stuck. Of fly is, I think, different from D&D, because I wasn't really aware of fly.
I think we were all scared by fly mechanics because they were
more complicated. So we will be learning more about fly in general because of George, but the mechanics are fairly complicated within Pathfinder. So there's like within changing direction too, I also lose certain amounts of movement.
But I think with any new curve, it'll be just more exposure. The more we do it, the easier it'll get.
Yeah, and it'll get easier. And overall, like I was reading through it, it won't be super complicated. I'll just probably have to keep a book open to fly. But we wanted to make sure, like, we could, George could be utilized at some point. So we came up with this concept of creating a saddle that would have either, we debated the benefits of enlarged person versus animal growth, because technically enlarged person shouldn't work for George because he's an animal.
Not a person.
Right.
So we found animal growth, which would apply, but it gave him like a +8 to his strength, which was slightly excessive when we talked about it, which I liked, but whatever.
They were super pissed, and they're like,
I was a little bit pissed off because Steve actually agreed with it, that animal growth was probably too much of a stretch to
Steve?
I know. Steve, it's who likes to because it's not his owl.
Part of the animal companion is they get stronger, right?
Yeah, he'll level up as we level up. It's the same thing, but I mean, he's a second level owl.
And right is that now. The difference between a companion
and a familiar?
And a familiar?
I don't really know much about familiars.
Because my familiar, at least it seems, not having looked at the companion, but the familiar seems a little more simple, where he has, or she, has a set of stats that feed off of me and my abilities and my stats. But then, as you level up, it's like every so many levels, I get another thing. Like, just recently, at 5th level, I got Speak with Familiar, so I can communicate with my weasel.
Oh, yeah. That's
cute. But then it'll be like another couple levels before I get something else, and it'll be basically another little feat that is basically capitalizing on the communion between myself and my familiar. But doesn't really, while my stats increase, the familiar's stats increase, but it's not like it becomes anything like I'm leveling it up.
An animal companion is essentially its own creature.
Okay.
So you level it up. It's simpler than leveling up a regular character. But
you still have decisions to make, right?
There's decisions to make.
Yeah, the familiar just has, like, you get this at this level.
Wait a minute. Enlarge animal.
There's no enlarge animal.
What is
animal
it?
Growth?
Animal growth. Does it enlarge it to a large creature?
No.
Does it go up 2 steps?
No, it just goes up to medium.
One. Goes medium and its strength increases by 8?
Yeah. It seemed a little heavy-handed, so, I mean, that was
what's his strength right now?
I think it's like a 10.
The strength is 10?
So it would
increase
score.
It from +0 to +4.
Yeah, something ridiculous.
Which, how long does the spell last?
Well, depending on how we created this
saddle.
Oh, okay.
So, because that's what we ended up having a conversation with Lenora.
You want to take it, you make your animal into a large creature, but
no, a medium creature.
A medium creature by casting like a permanent.
It would be like a spell that's on the saddle we would activate.
And then it lasts for, and what we decided on was, or Wolfie decided on was, okay, it lasts for 4 hours.
Yeah.
So there's something that you can do every time you activate it, it lasts for 4 hours. You can only do it once a day.
Did we say once a day?
Yes, I believe so. Otherwise, you could just keep
doing it. So it kind of has a relative time scale of, like, my mutagens.
Yeah.
Where mine are a little, mine increase with level, but it's still, like, every 10 minutes, I think. So right now, they can last for about an hour. But I don't know if this 4 hour count will increase with your levels too, or if it'll just be like
created object.
Okay, it's permanent.
It's like a wand. Yeah. You're buying a wand and you're casting this spell.
That's just
the way it has unlimited use.
You can buy another saddle later on if you think 4 hours isn't enough.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So what we basically did was we're at Lenora. We decided to trade all these items for a saddle,
as well as
some sort of
headband for Magnus.
Nice.
Which is where the whole conversation about Magnus kind of getting screwed over with getting stuff she didn't want to happen.
Or being too generous and not seeing enough of it come back.
Yeah.
Right. Because we looked at this ring, too, and something about this ring they wanted to give to Violet.
It was a ring that... Oh, did we keep the ring?
Yeah. Keep the ring. Yes.
So you didn't know. It's a surprise.
it's a ring of counterspell, I want to say.
I don't remember. All I remember is there's like stars and stuff on it or something.
Well, then, yeah.
It had stars and moons on it.
Doesn't matter. There's stars and moons on it.
But basically, what it happens.
Is it spell holding?
With. Yes. Spell holding.
It's spell holding.
Yes.
Where it can counter a spell, though, too. There's something with it where you can cast a spell into the ring and then do that. But then you can also, if that spell is cast against you,
you can
then the ring, like, basically... apparently very powerful. So we kept that, I believe. But then the horn was also...
It casts obscuring mist when you blew into it, which...
As an escape type thing.
Right, yeah.
We're so in a situation this
we
is
decided
bad.
It was unnecessary.
Magnus said, I don't need to escape. I have my axe.
And Taro's like, I'm just going to kill stuff.
No. And Tobias was like, I don't have to escape. I'll Tobias.
I'll
just die right there. But
so then basically we traded all these items. We also traded the torture tools.
Which was really funny because Taro goes to Magnus, you don't want to keep these? To Magnus.
You're an orc.
You're an orc.
Why don't you want to keep the torture tools?
You're violent and awful.
You don't know me.
Bitch. So we traded the torture tools for something.
I think it was this combination of things to get the two things.
Didn't we also get like a magic thieves tool kit?
They were going to give us thieves tools or something, but I'm like, I already got thieves tools. I don't need those.
So then, long story short, we ended up that night, I think we did a couple other things, putzed around. Magnus went to a bar and sought out Daphne to have a little private conversation with Daphne. You know, and this is part of the Magnus being good. Daphne is good, but Daphne is also lawful. And so Lord Nebar, as being one of these creatures who's lawful evil...
I don't understand that. I don't get it.
Well, there's...
How can you be lawful evil?
These three characters... Well, like...
Mob bosses.
It's
like the clearest...
They still don't follow the law.
No, Robin Hood. What's his name? Nottingham.
Sheriff of Nottingham. Where he's following the rules, he's taking the taxes, but he's... Because at the time, Prince John was all about raking in the dough, so...
Or, know. Like, any evil dictator, you know?
Right,
like
following the laws of their society, but doing it to evil ends.
I suppose it's generally people that create the laws, though, that can do that.
Or at least capitalize on them.
I mean, mob bosses and stuff would be the same way, that they are using the laws...
At least on a surface level.
On a surface level.
They have the front of their pasta business, back room.
Well, and it's also that there's, like, it's a code. There's a code within...
Right.
It's basically like corruption, though. I mean, that's how I think of lawful evil.
Yeah,
right. That's a better thing. So it's almost like you can only be lawful evil if you're part of creating the rules.
Or,
if you're part of society, I
mean. Or if you see the means to your evil ends rely on organized structure and stability within a certain code, whether it's a society or a government or whatever. You need to have this order. You need to have the king be in power. Whatever it is, you need for this structure to stay what it is, because you rely on that in order for your evil plots to take place. If this society, code, government, whatever fell, you couldn't go about your wicked ways as easily. Like the Sheriff of Nottingham, if all of a sudden Robin Hood dethroned Prince John and suddenly this whole taxation thing wasn't happening, Sheriff couldn't go from house to house and just start taking money from people and calling it taxes.
Because
that society is now crumbled.
So basically, yes, I think to some extent it depends on a certain situation being in power. But I went to the bar, I'm talking to Daphne and having a conversation with her about, first of all, Lord Nebar.
Just you two.
Yeah, just the two of us. Having a drink together, talking about how we're down in the catacombs and I saw the goblin who was the spellcaster, who was also the spellcaster who we saw by the cave that Lord Nebar was going into. So they've got to all be connected. This goblin was working with the were-rats and Rasputin, and she did, even though she's like, people think we don't know about this stuff, but I do know about Nightwall and some of that thing.
The underground.
And basically that Magnus saying, this is wrong, this is what we think, and I know we don't have enough evidence right now, but I need you to know that this is wrong, and this is gonna not happen.
I was not paying attention when you did this.
We were outside, isn't it? You were doing the owl flying thing. Wolfie and I went out.
I was gonna ask how that actually played out at the table.
Yeah. Like,
if you're having a one-on-one conversation.
Yeah, we had this conversation with, and it wasn't a secret, because later on Magnus told Tobias about it.
Yeah.
But it was also the point of...
But just to play out a one-on-one scene with three other people.
Well, and there was also the Magnus was in a bar fight, and when he came out, there was that guard there.
Yeah.
And so Magnus was also like, you need to know that your guards are getting paid off, and they're not doing good. They're working for evil people.
Kind of like...
Bad. So while it is for lawful Magnus doesn't see the issue as being they're breaking the law. The issue to him is that they're doing evil things.
Right.
Right.
So what did Daphne have to say?
She was very, like, appreciative, and with the guard thing, she, oh, I'm going to talk to dude that you guys met. I don't remember what his name was. I wasn't there.
The dude.
Outside of our house.
Oh, yeah.
The oh. dude.
I have a question for you, Mako.
What?
Have you ever played an evil character?
No.
But
Scarlet wasn't evil.
She wasn't evil, but she had leanings toward evil.
Yeah, she was.
But that's why
she wouldn't get drunk.
Yeah.
But, like,
She might do something awful.
Has that ever happened in the context of, you know, Sunday night role playing? Like, has anyone ever played an evil character?
We just really realized that we couldn't. You can't really mix a group because the
there
evil
was
character
one point
would always
when
be
I had a thief. Advantage. I played a thief character that.
A rogue, if you will.
A rogue. I don't know if this was back before 3.5 even. Maybe it was 3.5.
No, yeah, it was in...
But wasn't Krasny
It was in Krasny's world, yeah.
Yeah. And I was this rogue thief rogue character.
Right.
And there was a... I forget the details of the scene, but the main issue was there were bad guys in this room area, whatever, but then there were also innocent civilians.
No. The bad guys were innocent civilians that were turned into ravenous people.
Right.
Like zombies.
Right. So I... Readers. But it was not quite that irrevocable,
mm-hmm.
where they could be... At least it hadn't been proven that they were beyond repair.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, zombies generally are... They turn zombies, you gotta kill them. They're not gonna turn back into humans. Your best friend
right,
or whatever.
Right, yeah.
So I didn't hesitate in this scenario, and just whatever my means of destruction was, I just took out, like, a whole handful of them. And as it turns out, we actually could have brought some of them back, but I just killed... a whole handful of them. And Krasny definitely afterwards was like, this might kind of compromise your alignment. And I was fully accepting of that, but that was perhaps an extreme example.
What was your alignment?
It was neutral at the time. Probably chaotic neutral, like
yeah,
any good rogue.
But you know, that's one thing where I think that as a DM, you can't really push that with one incident.
Right.
Where you're like, oh, now you're evil. It's like, no.
At least bring up the conversation.
It has to be a trend that your character is.
Yeah.
Your character is drawn to these things.
Steve made that statement of when I was playing Lola, which I was mentioning earlier, that Lola was casting a lot of evil spells, and oh, maybe you're becoming a little bit evil, but, you know, I had this logical, this is why she's not, because most of what she does is still healing.
Right.
Good, positive energy.
Lola was just selfish.
Well, she just the bottom line is, what are the consequences for your character?
Yeah.
Like, if you're a cleric, that's to a good god. Like, if Tobias started doing necromancy spells, I could totally see Kriya being like, what are you doing?
Yeah, now you have no power, kind of thing.
You're not... all of a sudden you're going to try to heal something? Fuck off.
Yeah.
But with this rogue character, it's more of like an internal alignment. Or like with Boddington and the whole poison thing.
I don't think as a cleric you can cast spells that are against your whatever.
Good point.
So, like, as a good cleric, but maybe you cannot cast necromancy.
Maybe you end up using the dagger.
You allowed somebody out of our party to use that evil dagger.
Just
that
could
be considered something that went piss Kree off.
I don't know.
Right. Well, I think so. I would assume so. I mean, you guys know in my world, my gods tend to like to be a little bit more up in front to help you along. I did quite a bit to you, Nicole.
But you
were so great with it.
Other
people got so frustrated, but my God, you know, the gods, I feel like they're closer in this world where they'd be like, well, I'm going to guide you towards what I want. You know, towards what is right,
yes,
and not to what I want, but towards what is right
from that God's point of view,
which is thus what that God wants.
Yeah,
right.
So I guess what begs the question that perhaps
I mean, it was very cool. She turned her armor into grain.
Yeah,
that was awesome. I loved it.
It was so cool.
Yeah, it was great. That whole setup was awesome because the whole time you guys just you didn't get it that NPC that was with you was the goddess, and she was just going along with you, and she was talking with and kept asking you questions and so forth, and I think
interacting
interacting and making you question your values and so forth, and that was really fun, and I loved it, and I was like totally excited for the moment when it turned all your armor into grain. It's
like it dumped. Well, do you want to give a little background?
Because
I mean, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
Megan wasn't part of that campaign.
Yeah,
her goddess was Sif. And Sif was the goddess of agriculture. And one of the things is, one of the gifts that she gives is that she gives them basically a mage armor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she always has this spiritual armor.
Mm-hmm.
Before the fact, it's like, because she wants you to remain humble and of the people. And
so,
of course,
like, you're not actually wearing, because
the people
armor.
Don't wear steel when they go out.
Right. And so, of course, the first, you know, Steve being the way he is and looking
at me armor.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you got to get armor. You got to get armor. And although Sif, you know, so they got her an armor and she had a shield.
Now, were you aware of this as the DM and you just kept your mouth shut?
Yeah, well, I was totally aware. I was totally
aware.
You had a plan. I was watching them and it's like, you know, and I sort of questioned you. It was like, oh, you're getting armor. And she's like, yeah, yeah. And so
did Nicole know of this particular point of view regarding armor?
Well, I don't think she fully. I mean, she was a young.
Not to say I'm not trying.
No,
to ask
she was a young. She was
you.
A young cleric. She was
awesome.
A young cleric.
Okay,
and she didn't know.
Yeah.
So she was following what more experienced fighters and a dwarf who would be like armor. Where
right.
armor?
These were
actually. It wasn't like necessarily Steve and Wolfgang though. They were directing it.
Right.
They were like,
well,
these are people
the
in
line?
My party that were saying you need armor.
Yeah.
You're not safe if you don't have armor. And I'm like. Okay.
you're big and experienced and successful, so I'll take your advice.
Right. Yeah.
But they don't know what it is to be a cleric.
Right. Yeah.
So then you turned all of her armor.
Well, what happened was she was wearing it for a while, and then Sif sort of always had a few interactions. And I've done this to you before.
Yeah.
In
past campaigns.
My gods, goddesses will always have a little bit of interaction with you. They tend to get a little bit more
that
into
that picture right there is...
Yeah.
Sabaston.
Yeah.
That was my first cleric.
Right.
I know. Let's point to pictures.
Yeah.
As we're on the radio.
Check out the Facebook. It'll be up there.
But they were going to kill some, I don't know, evil guys. I can't quite remember. But anyways, this...
All I remember is...
I think Sif played herself as being like...
a bard or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But it was like... But, you know, it was coming along with you.
Like a great Jedi Master played himself as being this little green toad.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so she was walking with, it was Eve.
Oh, yeah, my character,
Eve. Yeah, Eve. And she was like, well, yeah.
Is the one who wasn't playing?
And she goes, oh, you're are you not a cleric of Sif? And she's like, yes, I am. And she's like, I find it funny that you're wearing armor. She goes, oh, well, it's to protect myself. And she goes, of course it is. It makes sense. But she could kind of tell that This woman was not exactly pleased with their responses.
Right.
And then it was, anyway, so they came across a cave and the other ones moved in front of her. And Sif was behind you and it turned
out. It's like this huge, like, sunshine warmth feeling on my back. And
then beams the light and she goes and she said, did I not give you did I not give you magical armor as a gift? And you turned this gift into my face. Learn, young cleric.
Was it plus two good enough?
She's like, learn, young cleric, and she goes, and you will have to repent. And she turned all her armor into grain. She was it was great. And you were the best because you were just like, holy shit, I totally pissed off my goddess.
But that's what won me over as a player off. Where, you know, sitting at the table with Nicole, and you were doing great just to, like, playing to your character, but at that moment where it was like a crossroads of she could either get pissed because the DM is taking away her armor.
Yeah.
And what right does he have to just strip that away? He can do whatever he wants. He's taking away my armor. Fuck this guy. But then for you to go to the other way and just go, oh my, and just go the total path of repentance and play it like that character would if all of a sudden the god booming voice spoke into your head and only
but
to you to have it all melt away.
Tom was just so good at creating the visual imagery in my head that literally I'm like, oh no! Like, as me, not just Eve. I was just like, oh no, I totally screwed something up.
Well, and part of you as a human being is that you react a little bit different to, you know, like, Tom's telling you a story and the god comes and takes you away. Like, you're going to react like that and be like, oh my god! Like, not even your character, just you. And so one of the things that's even more fun for me is to see you playing a character that can't do that.
Just
that you're
like,
just stuck
it.
With Tara right now. It's like, why?
Well, because I can kind of see you when, at least in the last session, that Magnus and I were going back and forth and being fun and high drinks and crazy characters. And you're like,
Oh, fuck you guys. Oh, I don't care.
I was telling Megan in the car on the way here today that I'm like, Tara was really, really stretching me as a player. Because I'm honestly like, I don't always understand his motivation.
And kudos to you for embracing that sort of a concept.
I'm not so sure I like it now.
Just stick with it. You'll be surprised.
It'll work out.
I think one of the things that I always do with my characters that's a little different is you play a cleric, and it's to a good cleric or a good god, and you cast healing spells, and you cast bless, and that's what you do. Like, I played a cleric that was kind of
a twist on the taken-for-granted scheme.
Yeah, well, and then I played a barbarian dwarf.
That was a Casanova. Was a lover
and liked to, you know...
Megan likes to go outside of the stereotypical...
Well, I just think it's funny because it's, you know...
But to her credit, it's a different class and a different outside-the-boxness.
Stepping outside the core rulebook like some people like to do.
Well, I mean...
Yeah, you know.
It's good because it's that...
Bombs!
Because it has that juxtaposition. You know, it's like you are a cleric, but you're have this chaotic element.
You understand the cliche, as it were.
No.
Right.
But don't totally go in the face of that, where you still hold true to whatever god it is, or whatever cliche it is.
You still have
to
make it work.
Yeah.
I mean, you
like, with your barbarian, that was the Casanova, what turned him into the barbarian was not so much fighting battle. Grr! It was if there's a damsel in distress that needs rescuing.
Right.
That's what would trigger it. Apart from all of the errands, for lack of a better word, that you had to run, did any adventuring happen?
We did one more quick errand thing. We won't go too into depth with this, but we had to go to Daphne again.
Uh-huh.
So I could sign a contract.
That was hilarious.
Tobias did not want, and Magnus both did not really want to give me the saddle if I wasn't going to stay with them.
I didn't want to give it to you if you weren't going to stay. I didn't care about the contract.
Yeah.
And then Tobias,
because you have
like,
an element of trust in people.
Right. So, you know, at first that portion of it hadn't even come up, and Magnus and Tara are having a little conversation where Magnus says, well, I know these rules are sometimes stupid, but they're not bad, and really, you know, they're okay, they work all right. It's just, if something's messed up, they're totally okay with us killing people. But these rules are just, you know, they're what they are. So just, you know, just sign it. It'll be fine. Like, we signed, because I think we signed
Maybe you
S-E-X.
Should sign yours with a Y.
That's what I said!
Oh, but Tara was just, like, not happy, and insisted on reading through the entire contract.
Nice. And then wanted to add addendums to it. And at one point, Tobias was like, all right, because Daphne said, okay, if you don't want to sign it, you don't have to. You won't get the payment and this other benefit of it.
But Tara likes money.
But you can still go with these people. You know, that's fine. If you want to sign it later, you can. And Tobias goes, nope, you're signing that or you don't get the saddle.
And then Tara's like, hilarious.
Yeah. I could totally see this happening.
After we spent like an hour figuring out how this saddle is going to work for the spell.
I know, Tobias is just like, nope, you can't add
ultimatum.
So he ends up signing it, but I still cannot. We should get our Russian down here, our law student Russian.
Oh,
this phrase, but there's a phrase where you can sign something and say, you know, I'm signing this, but I don't agree with it.
It's like, I'm signing this because I know I have to sign it, but I really don't like it.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a term for it. Yeah, so then Tara signs, we're like, well, we kind of need something to do, you know, as players.
Right.
We need to fight something.
Have we rolled dice tonight?
And so,
like, what point of the night was this? I mean, did you, like, start it?
Pretty late.
At 6?
It's like 8:30.
Did you start at 6?
8:30?
Yeah.
God, Steve must have been freaking out.
No, but Steve was the one, because, you know, Steve got to sit and figure out owl stats.
So he's doing that.
Audit my character sheet.
Yeah, he's like, audit, and then I'm like, oh, God.
You can take that away from him.
One more time, I'm going to kill you.
Good God.
So Daphne says, here, go find the head of the goblin raids out by Lord Nibar's area. And we ran into Bartholomew,
our
friend, the leprechaun.
Oh, yes.
Which I gave him more gold.
What'd you think of him?
I thought he was silly.
Okay, so you...
Well, yeah. I didn't really...
Don't try to guide her answer.
No, I was just curious.
And he's just like...
Because there's a certain divide on what the party thinks of Bartholomew.
Yeah. But I wasn't going to give him any
gold. We like him.
Yeah, as in... But I don't think you'd be able to guess what Violet's opinion is.
Violet doesn't care one way or the other. I mean, she finds some
Violet
interest.
Doesn't care about anything but magic.
Well, yeah. But Violet thinks
even
he's
if
interested.
We die, as long as there's magic there, she's fine.
Yeah.
If we die in a really cool magical way, I bet she'd be happy.
Yeah, she'd do detect magic on how you got exploded rather than grieve for you.
She would, yeah, there's a scientific element to
it. Yeah, you know.
What happened to Tobias?
Yeah.
She just does not. She's just like, are you so stupid you're giving this guy tons of money?
Are you so stupid that you have so much value in currency?
No, here's the point. We run into Bartholomew. Magnus gives him some money and says, hey, man, we're looking for the goblins. Have you seen them? I know they used to be at this cave. Bartholomew says, actually, after you guys came in here and massacred them, they built a little spot 2 miles up this way.
Mm. And they have a boat.
Exact directions. Yeah, and for some reason he said they had a rowboat. One thing that was really funny is Wolfie kept referring to... Bartholomew told us that we were going to run into some augers. And we're like, what are augers?
This is so great.
And we're like, even Steve, totally. Nobody has any idea what augers are. We're talking about
this. Though, I rolled a knowledge nature, I think, or okay. something.
Later. This is later.
So no, but this was minutes. Before, though. Like, and he said, you know what they are. They're big. And so yeah, that's all he tells me. They're really big.
Well, they're freaking ogres.
Wolf he was just trying to not to let throw Steve off. Metagame.
What? To not let Steve metagame. That's brilliant. He kept playing ogres.
Well, guess what Steve would.
Like, oh. Actually, Bartholomew just pronounced it wrong. They're ogres.
Yeah.
But we...
That's the way his grandfather and his grandfather before him.
Yeah.
Is that ogres?
Ogres.
So, fucking augers.
So what we have happening is we're going up to this place and we...
North of the cave.
Yeah, in the hills. Yonder.
So
yonder.
What was the terrain? Let's paint the scene.
It was a forest.
Right. Was it rocky? Was it hilly?
Hilly. It was like a big...
Well, we ended up is on this like hill. Okay. Hill thing. So what Taro is doing is going ahead and scouting like maybe 50 feet. Because
you know
up.
This shit
Because
than
I'm
anybody.
Also very, very sneaky.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So,
whereas
they are not.
And Tobias, not so much.
Yeah, but if Boddington was there.
Like with a -40
yeah, stealth roll. What was the word for wagon?
Buggy.
Buggy. With my little alchemical buggy squeaking.
So,
sounds like a man. Alchemical buggy.
Alchemical buggy.
So I go ahead and I see these goblins. And so first, I have to fight this urge not to just automatically kill the goblins.
Right, I need their ears.
Yeah, because I want to kill them and I hate them, just like I hate orcs.
Now, how many were there?
I saw seven. Okay. Seven goblins.
Just, were they around like an entrance or were they just
yeah, there's
out
like
the middle
this,
of nowhere?
There's this little house. We're on the hill.
Okay.
Like, we're going up this hill.
Yeah.
They're at the top of the hill with
lots of bushes and trees and things. So there's like a little hut up there, I think, and that was it. So I fight this urge to kill them immediately and go back to the other guys who are farther back. And I'm like, okay, there's these guys up here. Let's go kill them.
So, to keep it without going into every detail of everything we killed a lot of them.
No, we killed them all. Two of them ran away and came back with more bugbears and augers.
Augers.
and the sorcerer.
An auger. At one point, Magnus did
An auger sorcerer?
The
or
no,
sorcerer.
The goblin sorcerer. The one that makes things go bang.
No, it wasn't the same one.
I was going to say, leave that one to me.
No, it wasn't the same one. He said it was I think it was wizards.
No, I think it was the same one.
No, because that one is like nemesis from several.
But I think
situations.
I killed it.
It wasn't the same one.
That would be kind of awesome for Boddington to come back from his errand going, what?
That's okay. I have the head in my pocket.
All right. So the whole head?
Yeah. Well, we kept it because we needed proof to bring back to Daphne that...
Who the leader
who
was.
The leader
and
was.
I assumed that this was the leader, so right. I put the head
well,
in my
I
pocket.
Well, I think that with all the whatever years. Information we got from Bartholomew and Daphne and whatever, that led us to believe that the spellcaster was...
But between a halfling ranger, a quark fighter, and a human cleric, you were able to take out a camp of...
And
at
an
least
owl.
Seven. And an owl.
Yes. Well, seven goblins, probably four bugbears, two ogres. And there's one.
Now, were you
like,
able to use the saddle at all? Did you get to the
I
whole
did not
enlarged
use
fly
the
fly?
Okay. Because there's.
Kind of trees in the way and stuff.
It actually lowers. Because I had his stats incorrect when I had created them because, you know, I didn't do like a size bonus for certain things and stuff. So his AC is actually higher with. Out the saddle, mm-hmm. but there's certain other benefits to it that I don't really remember.
There's lots of back and forth
so
in the statistics.
Yeah, right. There was a lot of back and forth. So I didn't activate it this time. But George was actually very beneficial in the fight. So he killed some,
much like,
damaged some things.
And that's what I'm looking forward to is to having George and Manchester fight relatively side by side, even though you'll be in the air probably and I'll be on the ground.
Yeah.
But to have our two little animal friends that in any other traditional natural sense will be predator and prey, but now we're fighting for the same cause.
Yes.
This is totally what Boddington's about.
Well, I think there was like two funny moments in the fight for me. One was at one point Magnus was surrounded by three or four bugbears and did like the Cleave, Great Cleave, I'm gonna kill them all in one time kind of thing, and swings basically brought all but one down, but then turned to look to his side, and there's George fighting two goblins. So,
like from the ground or just swooping around in the air?
He's still in the air.
Yeah, he's still in the air at that point, but Magnus going, oh, fuck these bugbears, and on his next turn immediately just like,
well, 5 points one of them, over. One of them got George.
Yeah, he hit George, George was like hurt.
So it was 5 points point, over, but...
And, well, what, you know, and jumps over and starts destroying the goblins, leaving these bugbears alone because, yeah. Oh my god, George, I don't know why.
My Magnus, little feathered, my fine feathered friend.
Yeah, Magnus is developing, Magnus and Taro actually didn't get along super well, but no. Magnus and George have, he has some weird affinity for and then another point where I was fighting a goblin and the ogre ran up and I ran, you know, taking an attack of opportunity from the goblin, got hit by the goblin, then running
for,
towards
like,
the ogre
damage.
And because of reach, got hit by the ogre on an attack of opportunity and got 20 points of damage or something.
All
or
out of attacks of opportunity.
I think it was like 15 or 16 or no, because I got down pretty far.
I don't know, I wasn't paying attention.
Whatever. And then immediately, like, just destroyed the ogre in one swing. Which was just, like, super satisfying.
Which kind of happens, I mean, at least we've gotten kind of taken it for granted, like, every combat, Magnus will take something down in a swing.
This one.
I actually used one of my magic crossbow bolts.
Oh, okay.
Which I can't, like, since I don't have the sheet of paper here, since we played over at Steve's, I don't remember what they were, but they all had different effects on them. Like, different spells. Essentially. So, like, I did one where they ended up getting extra damage on it. So I rolled damage, and then they ended up shaken or something.
Okay.
No, that was... Steve had cast some spell.
Weapon of Awe.
Weapon of Awe.
Awe.
Yeah, because he cast Weapon of Awe, and they ended up criticaling on the sorcerer.
Oh, wow.
And so then they end up shaken because I criticaled.
Yeah,
so,
that was okay. What it is. If you critical with this... whatever, then you get to, you know.
With the Weapon of Awe.
Yeah. Then,
so that was actually a super sweet spell.
Yeah, that's amazing.
When you can get the dice to line up with it.
We did have the nice part of, you know, yes, there's only three of us, but we had the chance to bulk up a shitload before we went into this fight because we're scouting.
And Wolfie is...
We got our surprise
I can respect Wolfie, or I can assume Wolfie is aware of that.
Yeah.
Knowing that he has fewer players than what is usual, and he can throw the same amount of challenge, but still know what to give you kind of account for, which I think accounts for his perhaps obsessive adherence to balance and rules, is that while he does that, he's also aware and exhibits the knowledge when preparing encounters that he shows that level of balance.
The really funny thing was, too, because how we talked about how Steve grabbed a smattering of miniatures, we ended up fighting a couple spiders, too, because Steve brought
just
spiders.
Just happened to grab them, yeah.
So we went back to the hut, and Magnus opens the door, and there's a pit. There's a reflex save, and doesn't fall in the pit. But then there's spiders, so he shuts the door really quick.
Right.
And then they decide, we're going to throw alchemy fire, and they get this whole big plan, and Tobias and Magnus are talking about it. And then, of course, you know,
and Taro's out collecting ears while they're doing this.
And then, of course, like, while they're sitting there, like, okay, ready? All right, we're going to do... Okay, do you want to stand there? No, I'll stand... You know, like, then the spiders crawl up the chimney, and they're on the roof about to kill us. And so...
All right, we're going to count to 16. Ready?
Ready.
One.
And so I think...
That's actually... So that... There was two parts of the fight. There was the regular goblins in the beginning. Then we encountered the spiders. Because two of the goblins had run off. And we had killed the other five. Then the spiders came out. Start fighting the spiders. And all of a sudden the two goblins come back with the bugbears and the...
While you were messing with the spiders.
While we were messing with the spiders.
Okay. The augers.
The augers.
But yeah, it was fun. I mean, the spiders did things like, you know, George got caught in a web and we did this and that.
Yeah.
And
but he made his reflex save, so he wasn't stuck. He just had to do double movement to get out.
Nice.
Yeah. Which is so much when...
You got 80 feet.
Though he could only actually go 10 feet.
Well, on the ground. He's got a double hop. Like, yeah.
But I did a fly check, so he flew up.
Nice.
And yeah, that was, I think, I mean, about where we ended. We made it back to town then, and
yeah.
At this point, Wolfie indicated that I believe we're all going to be
leveling up.
Six level.
Nice.
Mm, yeah.
Which you worked really hard for, Violet.
Hey, I probably will have to meet Wolfie, and I'm sure something's going
to happen. I'd say, well, just
one thing I really forgot to mention, I shouldn't forget this, is that one of Magnus's errands was going to the Tower of Kyriel to find out what the fuck happened to Violet.
Oh, okay, got
it. Because Magnus is not going to forget about Violet,
well,
right?
That's
nice. You know, Paddington's after me, whatever, Magnus just knows. At first, I think I rolled like some really piss poor roll on diplomacy, and Wolfie sent me to a bar. And I was like stumbling around the bar, like, I don't know.
Like, they have really shitty beer
here.
The
wizards are like going up to the, you know, the magic little elevators up to the bar on the fifth floor, and there's no way to get in. And I'm just like, I meant to go to the Tower of Curiel. And Wolfie's like, oh, okay, roll again.
They're all dancing to Sorceress Gaga.
So we ran into the guy with the cards. I don't remember.
Oh, Jack.
Jack Corcoran. And in a metagaming way, I said, I'm sure Violet has all the tools she needs to get out of there. Like, she will be fine. I'm sure she's in a good place. She's probably having fun and learning a lot.
And that was Boddington's assumption after he was kind of having second thoughts.
That's why I wasn't worried about you being taken off somewhere. It's the same way with you and your
guy. Except you got taken off by, like, an evil cleric to Tyrannus.
I'm sure he's
You turned into a puddle of gold.
I know, but
like, how bad can that be? Liquid.
But we're known. You just don't wear yourself so shit like that. I don't know.
It's true. Throughout the entire time, Taro keeps going to Magnus. They're like, I think your friend's dead. They turn to liquid. They're dead.
And then it ended with, and I don't know what you'll play in between this, if Wolfie does little sessions with you guys or not, but... Basically, as you get home, you see that the lights are on and you hear some gnomish laughter from inside, and Boddington and Violet are
taking body shots.
No, we didn't know you were there. We were just walking up to
leveling up.
Yes.
I mean,
yes. Well, one thing I am looking forward to is that this week will be the first week the party will be completely together.
We've
introduced Nicole
for one whole week, and then Steve's gone,
and then Steve has to get married.
What a jerk.
All these people getting married, deprioritizing this hobby of ours.
What the hell?
But
married on a Monday.
I got married on a Friday, and I made it to D&D on Sunday.
That's right. I was proud of you.
Yeah.
You guys tried to get me to play on Saturday. I was like, guys, I just got married last night.
You can do it.
Feet might get a little
mad. I'm pretty sure I was there after I got married, too.
It's true.
I think so.
Because Jason went off to Korea like 2 days later.
Yeah. Schlegel's the biggest douchebag.
What a jerk.
Douche! But regardless, next week, before this all happens, we will have Wolfie as the DM, Mako as Violet, Nicole as...
Taro.
Nicole as Taro, Megan as Magnus,
and Jake as Boddington.
Yes!
Woo-hoo!
For the first time since all we've together, assembled this whole disparate crew together. So, I don't know.
And the islands are coming.
The islands are coming. Well, I think, if anything, I'm very much looking forward to having Wolfie being challenged to having 5 people at his table.
Yeah, I know. First
and
time
all of the dynamics between a lawful good cleric that's kind of a tight ass and a ranger that's kind of a tight ass and a...
Not a tight ass, just doesn't understand.
Okay, well, you know.
And a Violet who's
to, like,
a...
Tight ass.
No, she's not.
She's so tight ass. Magnus are the only ones that are fun.
Relative to the two of us that know how to have a good time.
Have you guys ever had 5 players?
Yes, we have.
Back in the day, but not with our current crew. Like, we've had people come in and go.
Of course we haven't with our current crew.
Yeah, I know. That's what we're all getting excited about.
It'd be interesting. It'd be very interesting.
So we hope you're excited too, beloved listeners out there.
Yes. And we can tell you all about what it's like to be level 6.
6!
Woohoo!
Six is pretty well.
I
six
just created really a fifth cool. level character, guys. I cannot go up.
I don't even know what my owl can do.
I know. He just fixed all his stats.
But for now, we will leave you wanting and waiting.
Yes.
And this has been Jake.
I'm Mako.
Nicole.
And Megan.
And this has been RPG Afterglow.
Hey!
Clink.
All right. Clink.
Shot glasses that are empty.
Man, 2 weeks. Been listening. Just keep on thinking what Violet's gonna be like with the crew. It's gonna be fun.
I'm excited for Taro to meet Violet.
You're gonna be like. Totally
I feel like
annoying.
They're gonna hate each other.
I think
a lot.
Taro's gonna.
Don't
be
you think so?
Taro likes information.
Well, don't play it out right now. Save it.
You guys keep talking about it. You did this like last.
Whatever.
Week
it's
too.
Fun. Whatever. We're not secretive. Like.